Welcome to episode 14 of New Zealand Vegan Podcast. This is the second part of my interview with Gary Francione. Hope you enjoy. Thanks for listening. One of the things that you've been doing this for, 25, 30 years or whatever, and I've only been doing this for a little while. And How do you stop yourself from being jaded or frustrated by the situation? Because other people, what they do is they go out and they get violent because they can't stand it. Maybe they see the light, they go vegan, and they say, "Oh, it's so wonderful, and it's so wonderful to see this truth." And then they look around and they see these billions of animals and these billions of animals, and then they literally go crazy, and they get violent, and they commit acts of violence, and then we're getting this terrible name in the media. We have a terrible representation in the media that's very, very troubling, and that's why I try very hard when I'm debating people, not only to just, because I thoroughly believe in the argument, but also because I'm fighting against the stereotype of hysterical, irrational crazies.
Well, you've asked, there are a couple questions embedded in there. As far as the frustration level is concerned, I'm like everybody else. I get frustrated too, but, I always say to myself, however frustrated I am, I'm not the cow, that's going to be slaughtered. I'm not the pig that's, in a bad situation. I'm not the animal in the lab. However frustrating it is, I'm not the victim here. I mean, people always ask me, how do you stop from burning out? And I say, I've never been tempted to burn out, because that's a level of self-indulgence I don't think any of us can afford. But the issue that you're raising about violence, I think, is very, very important. And that is, I see the problem, Elizabeth, as violence. I don't see, the problem. I live in a world which tolerates a pathological, hideous level of violence, not just against non-humans, but against humans as well. And I want to talk about that before we wrap up today about the relationship between human rights and animal rights, because I think that's another thing that the movement doesn't connect, which is a shame. We live in a world of just horrible violence, and I see the problem as violence, and I do not see violence as the solution to violence. I mean, as Gandhi said, and Gandhi was right, if the problem is violence, using if you use violence to achieve the end, you will end up with violence at the end. So it's really sort of counterproductive to, if the problem is violence, by using violence, you're never going to get rid of violence. And so, as attractive as it may seem, it puts you into a vicious circle that's never going to sort of end. So I think that it's, I see the problem as violence. I see what I'm trying to do as a movement of peace. I mean, this is really veganism, abolition, peace, all of this sort of stuff. I see these things as very, very related. I mean, for example, veganism is the application of the principle of abolition to one's individual life. If you accept the principle of abolition, with respect to slavery, you liberate your slaves. You don't have slaves. You don't participate in the institution of slavery anymore. If you are an abolitionist with respect to animal exploitation, then you stop consuming animals. You stop participating in the institutions of animal exploitation. And that's just what you do. And so abolition, veganism is the principle is the abolitionist principle applied to your individual life. But I also see this very much as a notion, as part of the peace movement. I'm not interested in violence. As a matter of fact, I always tell people I'm violently opposed to violence. I'm not interested in violence. I'm not interested in judging people. I'm not interested in, I don't wish any of these people, I think we have to sort of take a step back and realize that the reason why we are in the mess that we are in, and we are in a mess, we are in a mess because we countenance violence. We are in a mess because we can see things, it's interesting to me. When I think about how standards of violence have changed in the time I've been on the planet, you know, when I was a kid, a movie in which a few people got shot, you had to be 16 years old to get into because it was restricted, and you know, it was movies that are now, you know, rated for families or for, you know, for young teenagers or whatever, were movies that were had restricted admission when I was a kid, and now the level of violence in films, and films where you don't even have to be 16 to get into them, are just phenomenal. You know, we have wars going on. I saw something the other day, was something like 27,000 children die every day of malnutrition in this world. I mean, there's something terribly wrong with that. And we really do need to be thinking outside the box. And thinking outside the box is rejecting violence. And so I think that, you know, the folks who are frustrated about what goes on with animals, the one thing I can tell you is you're never going to really make a difference by doing anything violent. If anything, you alienate more people that way. What I find really troubling is a lot of these people who do violence, a lot of these animal liberation front people, they're not even vegans. And you know what? I just think it's ridiculous. I mean, it's like that. You know, I've seen... I know because I've gotten emails from people who criticize my views about violence, and they say, you know, I hate your views about violence are terrible, and you know you're terrible because you
really
don't promote violence. Oh yeah, I get as a matter of fact, there are two issues that I get a lot of mail from animal people on. One is my positions against violence result in my getting a lot of animal people writing to me, or a lot of people who claim to be animal people writing to me criticizing my views. And there are websites that are devoted to criticizing my views on violence. I mean, you know, I got a few, you know, people have been sending me some URLs of some recent nonsense of this adolescent chest pounding and heavy breathing in favor of violence and criticizing me and saying that, you know, calling me peacenik and all this sort of stuff and whatnot, which is fine. I'm glad. I mean, I'm happy to be known. I'm quite proud. I'm quite proud to be identified as a peacenik. You know, it's somewhat superficial and simplistic, but you know, I want to be associated with nonviolence because it's extremely important. So I get a lot of criticism about that. And then when I don't engage most of these people because they don't really interest me, but to the extent that I have in the past, what's come out in some of my exchanges with them is that many of them are not even vegans. So, you know, they're always talking about, you know, let's do this, and you know, we've got to be violent, we've got to do this, we've got to do that, and they're not even vegan. So, I mean, come on, give me a break. I mean, even if they were vegans, it wouldn't make any difference. I wouldn't support violence. But what I find, you know, it's sort of like the question when somebody comes up to me and starts asking me about, you know, saying they have cats and what do they do? How do they feed cats a vegan diet? I always ask them, are you vegan? And I would say 70% of the time I have people say to me, no, I'm not a vegan. And my response is always, well, let's get you to become vegan first, then we'll worry about your cat. you know, but I mean, what the hell are you wasting my time asking me about vegan cats for when you're not even vegan?
Yeah.
You know, and the other thing that I get a lot of mail from animal people on is my position that I don't think we should be bringing domesticated animals into the world at all, including dogs and cats. And
yeah.
I get a lot of animal people get very upset when I say that, and they think that it's bad for me to say that because they think it sounds too radical. And my view is no, absolutely not. If there were, look, I live with 4 rescued dogs. We've had up to 7.
Yeah.
We've lost 3 of them in the past couple of years, but we have 4 rescued dogs, and there's nobody on the planet who loves dogs more than I do. And if there were 2 dogs left on the planet and it were up to me as to whether they continue to reproduce so that we could have pets, the answer is no way.
Yeah.
And animal people get very upset when I say that. But I think the whole institution of pets, I mean, look, my dogs are completely vulnerable. They're completely dependent on me. They're completely dependent on, you know, they depend on me when they eat, when they sleep, when they go to the bathroom. If I get, you know, if I get, you know, if I become distracted and I, you know, end up doing a, you know, 10-hour interview with New Zealand vegan and I sort of forget to put water in their dishes, well, they're, you know, they're just out of luck, aren't they? And,
yep.
And in a sense, they live in this, you know, what I call this netherworld of vulnerability. They're not really part of the animal world and they're not really part of the human world.
Yep.
And I really think it's tragic.
Yeah, and if you wanted to kill them tomorrow, guess what?
Absolutely. No, I have complete power over their lives.
Yeah.
I don't, I mean, I love them.
I
But I would
know.
be happier in a world in which we didn't have any domestic animals, none whatsoever. We shouldn't live with animals. There should be wild animals out there. We should leave them alone. We should leave their habitat alone. But that should be it. It should be, you know, them on, you know, them in their world and us in our world. And I, you know, we shouldn't really be bringing them into our world through this really nasty institution called domestication. But the domestication issue and the violence issue are the two things that I get an awful lot of criticism from the animal people about, because I mean I really, you know, I really don't understand this fascination with violence, and I really do see a lot of it as sort of adolescent chest pounding and heavy breathing. You know, it's juvenile. It really is juvenile.
You don't see it as people kind of. So they're not vegans who are doing the violence.
Well, some of them aren't. I mean, you know, some of them. I mean, you know, I don't. I mean, so I'm sure some of them are. I don't know. I mean, yeah. All I know is that there have been discussions in the past about the fact that a lot of the, quote, direct action, end quote, people are not even vegans. So, you know, I mean, my view is, look, let me be real clear. It wouldn't matter to me whether they were vegans or whether they weren't vegans. I don't
right.
really care.
Right.
I will not support violence. No how, no way. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. I don't understand what these people are thinking about. I don't understand what they think they're going to do. I don't understand. I mean, first of all, I think it's immoral. I think that it's inconsistent with what I understand to be you know, the basic premise of the abolitionist approach, at least as I've developed it in the years that I've been working on it and developing it, is basically the principle of nonviolence.
Yeah.
So you know, for me, nonviolence is key. But even if you sort of don't accept the theory of nonviolence, it would seem to me that as a practical matter, there is no social context in which I mean, look, Elizabeth, you and I live in a world where 99% of the people think that it's perfectly all right to inflict horrendous pain, suffering, death on animals because they enjoy the taste of them.
Yeah.
So when people are engaging in violent actions, particularly, I mean, a lot of these things are directed against vivisection. Well, I don't believe that any vivisection can be justified. I don't care what I don't believe in any animal exploitation, and I don't think any vivisection can be justified. But the bottom line is the use of animals to cure serious illnesses, which I think is stupid both causally and unjustifiable morally. Nevertheless, it's the only use of animals we make that isn't transparently frivolous. And therefore, if people are willing to tolerate animal exploitation for transparently frivolous purposes, doing violence against people who are engaging in the use of animals in a non-obviously transparently frivolous way is not going to resonate. It's not going to be. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah,
it's not
good
gonna
point.
Be, you know, it's not going to be comprehensible for most people. And so I think when people, you know, pick up the newspaper and they see that, well, you know, people who run a particular animal exploitation laboratory,
Huntington Lab.
Huntington is the one that comes to mind. Yeah, I mean, the idea that people are going to be that sort of violent action is going to resonate with people and is going to cause them to become sympathetic to the, you know, to the animal rights position is, I don't even understand that level of confusion. I can't understand why anybody thinks that that's the case. And you know what? You shut down Huntington, and you know what all that happens is? It just, the production moves to a different company.
Yeah.
That's all. Nothing happens except everybody ends up thinking animal rights people are crazy and in favor of violence.
And they get put in jail, really.
Exactly. I mean, I really don't understand what the logic of this is. It makes no sense to me. And, you know, so my view is that, look, you know, as far as I'm concerned, this is part of the peace movement. This is part, I mean, you know, I'm interested in opposing violence. I see violence as, I don't want to say see violence as the enemy, because that's a very sort of male way of describing the universe of, you know, enemies, you know, whatnot. But I, you know, I do see violence as the problem. And violence is the problem to be solved. And you don't solve a problem by perpetuating it.
Yeah. Okay.
That was the simple truth that Gandhi formulated when he was articulating his views of nonviolence. He said, you know, it's just common sense. If you are opposed to violence, using violence to end violence will guarantee that violence will never be ended. And he was, you know, that's so, you don't need a PhD in philosophy to understand that. What you need is common sense.
Yeah, and also what we're doing to animals. I mean, the very acts that we're doing against them is pure violence. I remember once you said, somebody who's eating meat is in or who eats animal products is engaging in violence 3 times a day, 7 days a week,
That's
you
right.
know. And anybody who says they're a pacifist and who is not a vegan needs to take a good look, because when you can't say some kinds of violence are okay if you're a pacifist. Well, I'm a pacifist about violence against humans, but I'm not a pacifist about violence against animals. Well, I agree. I don't think that you could, you know, really, I don't think you understand the concept of peace.
Exactly. And one of the things I find really troubling about these pro-violence people is they say, well, they want to use violence against animal exploiters. Well, who the hell's an animal exploiter? I mean, I would imagine that most of these people have family members who are
Right.
not vegan. Given that a lot of them aren't vegans, I would suspect that, you know, that they also have family members who aren't vegan. What are they going to do? Are they going to start bombing their mothers and fathers because, you know, because their mothers and fathers are animal exploiters? I mean, who's an animal exploiter? I mean, you know, the reality is most of the people who are involved in factory farming, for example, they don't care about fact. I mean, these are people who would move their capital to something else if they thought they could make more money.
Right.
The only reason why people engage in farming animals is they make a buck off of it.
Yep.
And so, and why do they make a buck off of it? Because all of the animal exploiters who eat the animals have demands. They create a demand for animal products. Well, the animal exploiters, really, the ones that are really the problem are those of us who eat the products. Those of us who are creating the demand, we are the animal exploiters. So I just get, I mean, when I listen to these people talk about, you know, when I read this stuff about promoting violence, I say, what are these people talking about? Who are the animal exploiters? What are we talking about here?
Yeah.
You know, and so I think it's just really important, you know, that you know, we've got. I mean, I have to tell you, it was last year, maybe 2 years ago, 60 Minutes, which is a big news program in
Yeah.
the States. They interviewed a guy, Jerry Vlasic. And Jerry Vlasic is a doctor, and he should know better. And he made the statement on television that he thought it was all right to use lethal violence against people who were doing animal experiments or whatever. I mean, you know, I mean, and I was thinking, I can't, you know, I mean, this is so troubling to me because people who are watching this are saying, okay, if you're opposed to animal exploitation, then you're the sort of person who maintains that we ought to be using deadly physical force against people who are doing, you know, who are engaging in animal exploitation. And the answer is, look, they do it because the rest, I mean, the people are doing animal experiments because they think, wrongly in my view, but they think that those things, those animal experiments will causally lead to cures for diseases. And the reason why they are doing that stuff is because we live in a culture where people are not willing to take care of themselves. They're not willing to do moderate exercise. They're not willing to have a healthy diet. They demand magic cures. They want magic. They want instant cure. The demand is there from a population that just doesn't care about, you know, I mean, they want to be able to go to the doctor and get a pill to make it all go away. Why are the farmers doing it? Because we are creating the demand. Why are the furriers doing it? Because we are creating the demand. We are the animal exploiters. We are the ones who are creating the problem. The exploiters are simply capitalists who are reacting to demand, and that's all they are. And
And
that goes for the scientific establishment too, because in the end, those people are all part of a I mean, those people are all part of of an enormously wealthy money-making enterprise called
sure.
biomedical research, which is as much of a business as factory farming is. But basically, these people are all business people, and they are engaged in what they're doing because of the demands that we place on them. But we're ultimately the exploiter. So if you tell me we're going to be doing, you know, we believe that it's justifiable to engage in violence against animal exploiters, well, you know what? Look to the person at your right and look at the person at your left, because they are the animal exploiters. And if you aren't a vegan, you are an animal exploiter.
Yeah, very good point. I think that's amazing, and it is. I think, you know, the more people that we get who are who say those kinds of things. I mean, I try to make it very clear when I meet people and I say I'm a vegan, I'm an animal rights activist, and I haven't been shunned by anybody. Everybody always wants me to come and hang out. They know that I'm going to talk about these things, but I try not to be accusatory, and they like my company. But the image out there is astonishingly bad. And I was talking to Jordan actually about an interview that a TV show, and one of the themes was that this group of animal activists blows up a laboratory, and the cops have to get involved in that kind of thing. And that is very commonplace. And I think that the ones that make it to the media and the ones that get the attention, and like, is whenever Peter gets on the news, it's because they attacked Lindsay Lohan for wearing a fur coat, or they went down the runway after Gisele Bündchen and threw stuff on her. You know what I mean? And I think that there's really probably not much we can do about what they do. We just have to.
Well, look, I mean, I want to make two, well, before I go on to make the point I was going to make about, what we do about PETA with Lindsay Lohan and, whatnot. I want to emphasize to people that every day you get up, you have an opportunity to influence somebody. And, we've got to get away from this idea that we need leaders. People keep always saying to me, why don't I start my own group? And I always respond by saying I would rather be dead. And because I really think we need to get away from this concept of I mean, look, I'm not suggesting that you or anybody else accept what I say. I put my arguments out there. If you think they're valid arguments, they're valid arguments. If somebody says 2 + 2 = 4, that's either right or wrong, and it's not a question of who says it. If my arguments are logically valid, if they hold together, then it's irrelevant whether I'm saying them or whether somebody else is saying them.
Right.
I'm not suggesting that you or anybody else accept what I say. As a matter of fact, I'm perfectly happy to debate people if I can if I can find people who disagree with me who are willing to debate with me.
Yeah,
I'm
I
more than
know.
happy to do that. So I'm all in favor of that sort of thing. But I think we got to get away from the concept of, we need leaders. Each of us has to be a leader. We have to get away from this hierarchical concept, because in a sense that's part of the problem as well.
Yeah.
We have to get away from the hierarchical concept, and each one of us is a potential agent for great change. Every day, there isn't a day that goes by I don't talk about this. Now, obviously, because I've been doing this for a long time, and because I do things like this podcast, and I have the blog, and I write books, and I'm a professor in a university, and I teach the stuff in classes and stuff, and I give lectures at other universities, and blah 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 blah. I have a certain sort of scope of fora available to me that most other people don't. But everybody has an ability to influence other people. Let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. I'll be sitting in a vet's office, and I'm sitting there with some, I'm waiting to see the vet, and I'm sitting there with somebody who's got, dog or cat with him or her. And I'll just give you an example of a conversation that happened a couple weeks ago. I was waiting to see my vet, and there was a woman in there sitting there with her cat, and she was, she had the cat in a little carrier, and I said, what's wrong with your cat? And she said, well, we're not sure. She hasn't been eating well. And we, past couple of days, we're worried, she may have an obstruction. We don't know if it's a, bad obstruction or something that can be gotten rid of fairly quickly. And, we had an x-ray and it doesn't look good. But anyway, I let her, she talked for a little bit. And I said, it's amazing how much, we love these animals, isn't it? And she said, absolutely. She said, I adore this animal. She said, I've got two kids. And she said, she said, I consider this cat my third kid. And she said, I really love this cat. And I said, the really strange thing is that when you think about it is how much we love animals on one hand, and on the other hand, how much we live in a society which commodifies animals and just treats them like garbage. And she said, what do you mean? And I said, well, I said, think about it. I said, what's the difference between your cat and the cows and the pigs and the chickens that we eat? And she looked at me and she said, well, that's an interesting question. And we started talking about that. And we had about 20 minutes before I got called in for my vet appointment. But when I left, she was still sitting there because obviously I was leaving and she was about to go in. And she said, she said, what you said was very interesting. And she said, here's my number. I'd like to continue the discussion. And I had another discussion with her, and I sent a copy of one of my books. And I got an email from her a couple of days ago saying, I don't know exactly what to make of all of this, but I think you're going to actually push me into being a vegan. And I wrote back to her, and I said, I don't want to push you into anything. Because pushing people, I said, I'm sure you're using that expression, you know, colloquially. I said, but the important thing is that you see it's the right thing to do.
Right.
But you see, that comes out of one 20-minute conversation in a vet's office. And what I'm telling you is every single day, you know, I'll be sitting in an airplane, you know, and I'm sitting next to somebody and I get my special meal when they, you know, when, you know, because I have the vegan meals and so you get your meal first and somebody says to me, oh, do you have an allergy? And I say, no, I'm a vegan. Oh, really? You don't eat any animal? No, I don't eat any animal. Why is that? Is that for health reasons? No, actually, it's because I like animals. Well, I like animals, and then I end up discussion with that person. So the thing is that I try to use every opportunity I can to talk about this with people. And I you know, not only do I do things like your podcast or radio shows or books or lectures or whatever, but I have individual conversations with people every single day of my life. Every single day. You know, I go to my, you know, if I go for, you know, if I go to a chiropractor for an adjustment, you know, I end up talking about veganism while I'm there. If I go, you know, when I'm in the supermarket, you know, if somebody asks me about stuff I'm eating or points out, you know, says, gee, you know, you look like you have a healthy diet. I say, well, I'm a vegan.
Right.
And they say, really, you know, what's that mean? And I discuss with them. I talk with everybody I can, and you can do that. You don't need to, you know, you don't need to do anything special to be able to, you know, look, my view is, I've been saying this now for a long time, that veganism is the most important form of activism if you care about the issue of nonviolence and if you care about the issue of peace and if you care about the issue of animal exploitation. So as far as I'm concerned, if you're a vegan and you don't do anything more, I'm happy with you. I wish you would do more, but yeah. I'm happy with you.
Yeah.
But if you want to do more, there are tons and tons and tons and tons of opportunities to do more. And that's why I just, you know, I created that website. Anna and I worked hard on that website to try to sort of create something that was user-friendly and where people could go. Now, look, you got to be willing to spend a few hours looking at the video presentations, which are very simple. They are designed to be very simple and sort of really burn the theory into your mind without too many, you know, too many complicated concepts. And so, you know, that's what we try to do. And that's what we try to do with everything on the site. That's what I tried to do when, you know, we wrote that pamphlet. And that pamphlet's now being distributed all over the world. Anybody with a printer can print it out.
Yes, I have.
You know, it's, you know, if you have a double-sided printer, you can do it on one piece of paper. You know, and it's being distributed all over the place. As I said, it's in Japanese, it's in Dutch, it's in Danish, it's in Greek, it's in French, it's in Spanish, it's Italian, it's Portuguese, it's in Polish. You know, and it's being distributed all over the place. So you can print those things out and go to the mall. You know, I mean, make sure you get permission of the property owner so
yeah.
you don't get arrested. But you know, pass literature out. You can, you know, there are all sorts of things that people can do. You know, a couple years ago, I was in Spain, not, you know, a country which is not known for its, you know, for its great, you know, veganism. And I was in Valencia. I was giving some lectures at the University of Valencia. And I met a group of activists while I was there who every Saturday, that Valencia is a beautiful city. And they have this wonderful sort of public area where every Saturday, maybe it's every Sunday, but it's one of the weekend days. Everybody, you know, puts a table out and they pass out literature or they sell, you know, bracelets that they make. You know, it's sort of like a little market.
Yeah.
It's a market. And this group of animal advocates, every week they had a table set up and they passed out abolitionist literature. They passed out stuff on nonviolence. And they oftentimes would have some vegan food samples that they would give out to people so people could see how tasty vegan food was. And somebody, one of the other activists or advocates or whatever you want to call them, said to me, well, you know, What other sorts of activism can people do that sort of are more active, you know, than what these people are doing here? And I said, what these people are doing is perfect. This is exactly what they should be doing. Every week they're educating people about abolition, the abolition of animal exploitation, the futility of animal welfare regulation, the relationship between human rights and animal rights, the importance of nonviolence, and on top of it all, they're passing out food samples. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, that is activism. That is the most important form of activism. And you know what? Anybody can do that.
Yeah, I know.
Anybody can do that. You don't need a multi-zillion dollar organization in back of you. You don't need a lot of money yourself. It is something that you can do on a shoestring. You can do it with a relatively small amount of money. You can probably do it on the amount of money that you end up spending on video games and, you know, and iPods and all that other sort of stuff. I mean, you know, it's probably...
Or the check that you're sending to Peter.
Exactly. Because, I mean, look, part of what's happened, Elizabeth, is activism has become sit down and write your check to these organizations. That's not activism.
No.
That's not active. Not in my, and not in my view. Activism is you go vegan and if you want to do more, look, as far as I'm concerned, you go vegan and that's fine. If you want to do more, then go out and educate other people about veganism.
Yeah.
That doesn't cost you anything. Giving money to these organizations, you might as well take it and, you know, throw it away, because these organizations, I have a lot of problems with what they're doing. I mean, I think as a matter of fact, there's no national organization in the United States that I think is worth any. I just don't agree with what they do. Again, I'm not criticizing the people who are there. I'm not saying these are bad people or that these people intend to do anything wrong. I just think that they're thinking about the situation as wrongheaded, and that it's not going to get us anywhere. But I think it's important to realize each of us is capable of being a leader. Each of us is capable of engaging in really changing the way other people think and approach these issues. But we really need to be agents of change. We need to be, you know, we need to be the change that we want to see in the world, which is something else Gandhi said.
Yes.
But we need to be that change. We need to be that change. Each of us needs to be that change. So if what we want is a world of nonviolence, in a world of no animal exploitation, in a world that respects human rights, we need to be those things. And, you know, and that leads me to an important point that I think needs to be made about the relationship between human rights and animal rights. I think it is appalling to me that, you know, for example, we say, well, speciesism is bad because it's like racism and sexism. But we're willing to promote sexism. You know, we're willing to use sexism to promote animal rights. I mean, I have been appalled. Indeed, there were several reasons why I stopped working with PETA in the early 90s. This was not the only reason, but it was a primary reason, was I objected to sexism. As far as I'm concerned, as long as we treat meat like women like meat, we're going to continue to treat animals like meat. That's just the way it works. And I my view is speciesism is morally unjustifiable in the same way racism is, in the same way sexism is, in the same way heterosexism is, in the same way ageism is, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And therefore, I will not use those means. I do not view using racism or sexism or anything else or any other form of discrimination as a means to the end of abolishing speciesism.
It's like using violence to end violence.
Exactly. And look, sexism is a form of violence, as is racism. I mean, these are they're not violence in the same sense as hitting somebody, but they are forms of violence in the sense that they injure people, they harm people, and so I think that it's very, very important. I really am appalled, actually, by these juvenile and terribly sexist campaigns that PETA promotes, because really, in the end, they don't. Not that I wouldn't support them even if they did help animals, but they don't do anything to help animals. They're just about promoting PETA. That's all they're about. And you know, it's self-promotion of PETA, and it has nothing to do with, you know, I mean, I remember having discussions with PETA folks in the late 90s, in the late 80s rather, early 90s, in which I was objecting to the I'd rather go naked than wear fur campaign. And the bottom line is the fur industry is stronger in 2009 than it's ever been. And so, you know, the I'd rather go naked than wear fur campaign ain't working. Even if it did, I wouldn't think it's all right. But it ain't working. You know, it's just not working. And you know, eroticizing the fur issue is not a way of getting rid of the fur issue. And, you know, I also, I mean, I don't even, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I don't even distinguish between fur and leather and wool and silk. I mean, you know, I think I've always had problems with the anti-fur campaign because the anti-fur campaign has largely involved it's been targeted. You know, women have been the targets of the anti-fur campaign. And, you know, there are a lot of animal activists or whatever you want to call them who will go up to women on the street and confront them about fur coats, but they won't do that with men wearing leather jackets because they don't want to lose their teeth. And and I my view has always been it's a clothing issue. It's not a question of fur. So I don't even talk about the fur issue per se. I talk about the clothing issue. You know, that we ought not to be use animals. We ought not to use animals for clothing, which I realize has now just alienated my New Zealand listeners because of all your sheep industry there. But you know, actually, I mean, there's a huge. I mean, the violence in the wool industry is horrible. It's just horrible. And you know, and leather is horrible, and silk is horrible, and all of it's horrible. So,
you know. Yeah, you know, I mean, bringing that up, there's actually on the mainstream news this week on TV3, there was this huge outcry because they're going to, I guess part of the Muslim festival is where they sacrifice a lot of live sheep, and we're sending a whole bunch of sheep on a, you know, 2-week journey on a boat over to Mecca or wherever it is, and everybody's outraged, including my landlord, who I have had conversations with, a lot of debate with him about veganism and things like that, and he said, I'm writing a letter to TV3. And, you know, and my good friend Jordan recommended that I talk about it on my next podcast because everybody's so outraged. They showed video of these sheep on this boat. And I'm like, you all eat sheep. You all eat sheep and you all wear wool. So, you know, I really want to use that to just say, look, you know, don't you see? I mean, you know, see how horrible it is what they're doing to these sheep going to Mecca. That's what they're doing to the sheep next door. That's what they're doing to the sheep down the road. That's what they're doing to the sheep that you eat, that you make your carpet out of. So, you know, if you are outraged, and I try to say you've got to take advantage of that. Like, a lot of people get angry and say, well, these omnivores, you know, they're so hypocritical. On one hand, they're, you know, saying this. On the other hand, they're eating them. And I say, well, we're lucky that they're objecting to that. If they weren't objecting to that, if they thought that was fine, we wouldn't have a hope in convincing them to go vegan. So we have to exploit their compassion and point out.
I agree with you. I agree with you completely. And I think that, you know, I think that you've got to be very careful with those sorts of campaigns which focus on things like Ramadan or things like that because Because, you know, it's easy to criticize, particularly in 2009, it's really easy to criticize Muslims who have become the new sort of, you know, victim du jour,
sure.
You know, the people that everybody feels comfortable about discriminating against. And you know, I remember, you know, it was very – I don't know whether you had it in New Zealand, but certainly in the States, there was a period of time where you couldn't go to your mailbox without, you know, having 10 different notices from various animal groups about Koreans eating dogs. And, you know, it was the big, you know, the Koreans and it was primarily the Koreans, but I think it was the Chinese as well. But basically it was aimed at the Koreans and the Korean dog markets. And I remember incurring the wrath of a number of animal people when I was on a radio show and I said I thought that I found that those that campaign to be sort of a racist xenophobic situation. People got very upset with me and I said, well, look, I said, you know, the Koreans don't fetishize dogs, you know, the way we fetishize dogs. So, like, you know, I don't think the Koreans should eat dogs, but I don't think we should be eating cows, pigs, and chickens. And you know, a lot of the people who were really outraged about the Korean dog markets were people who ate meat. So,
yeah.
Like, you know, what's going on here? And so as far as the, you know, look, I don't think it's great that they're, I think it's horrible. I mean, I think it's hideous that they're putting sheep on a ship and sending them, you know, to Mecca or any place else where they're going to be slaughtered. But really, in the end, what's the difference between, you know, they spend 2 weeks on a ship or they spend 2 weeks in a horrible, hideous before they're slaughtered in New Zealand? You know, I mean, it's probably more traumatic for them to be on the ship, you know, although I don't even know how one measures that sort of thing. But I mean, you know, but even if it is, the bottom line is, the difference between being a sheep who gets shipped off to Mecca and a sheep who doesn't get shipped off to Mecca and ends up, you know, getting slaughtered in New Zealand is de minimis.
Yeah.
If you care about, you know, that's why part of the thing I think is, you know, it's sort of like easy to whip up animosity and resentment against Muslims because of that's the way, it's the world we live in. But Which I, when I think is unfair, and I think that's unfair, and that's, you know, that's unfair to followers of Islam, but I also think that you know, I agree with you. We've got to capitalize on that by saying, hey, look, you know, if you care, why do you care? I mean, you know, well, because the animals suffer a lot. Well, they suffer. The ones that you ate last night suffered a lot, and they suffer in an awful lot. And the difference between, you know, I mean, some of these, you know. There was a movie I saw years ago with Vanessa Redgrave, who's one of my favorite actresses, and she made a movie. I think it was called Playing for Time. I think that was the name of it. And it was a movie about a woman in a concentration camp in the Second World War, and she's a musician, and she's offered the chance to play in an orchestra that the Nazis used to have. You know, music on the way to the gas chamber, because it used to, you know, make people feel calmer, and used to, because they didn't tell people they were going to gas them, obviously. And so, she's confronted with this dilemma of should she play in this orchestra, which will allow her to live longer, but on the other hand, what she's doing is make, you know, she's engaged in this Nazi ruse to make people feel better about what's going to happen in the gas chamber, and in a sense, these animal welfare reforms, the best of them, are nothing more than putting a string band on the way to the gas chamber, and so, you know, that's the sort of the I want to say humor, but that's not the right word. That's the sort of the sad irony, I guess. These people who support animal welfare reforms, the most radical of the reforms that they're proposing, even if they got through, would amount to no more than you know, putting a string band on the way to the gas chamber, or putting an orchestra on the way to the gas chamber. And I think it's really important for people to understand, if you care about this issue, if you think animals are members of the moral community, whatever else follows from that recognition is the conclusion that you can't eat them. And, you know, particularly when, look, you know, people always ask me, well, if you were in a desert island and there was no vegetable around, and you had a choice of eating, you know, a rabbit or starving to death, would you eat the rabbit? And I said, if you and I were on the desert island and there were no vegetables available, I would kill and eat you. So it becomes sort of irrelevant. I mean, you know, in a situation in which, you know, you were starving to death, and there was some necessity, and there was no other way of, you know, I mean,
it's completely different.
Right, exactly. But I mean, given that, you know, we're doing this for no other reason than we like the taste, or this is traditionally what we do, or this is the stuff our grandmothers used to make, so we're stuck in these stupid traditions. Big deal. I mean, so what? I mean, you know, sexism and racism are two very, very time-worn traditions. Should we continue them simply because they're traditional? The answer is no. So I think that we've got to really get away from that way of thinking. But you're 100% right to say we need to capitalize on people's compassion. Yeah. We need to, but we also need to capitalize on people's sense of justice, because it's not just a matter of compassion. It's a matter of, I think most people really do care about these issues, and they care about them on a number of levels. And what our goal is, our task or our challenge is to sort of hit that part of, you know, to get to that part of people, to sort of ignite that spark. Because you know, are you going to ignite the spark in everybody? And the answer is no. But you know what? Let's try to ignite the spark in everybody we can. And then we'll worry about the ones in another million years. We'll worry about the ones that we can't get to. Let's focus. I mean, I hear this from these animal people all the time. Well, you're not going to convert everybody. And the answer is yes, duh. Of course we're not going to convert everybody. But let's deal with the people who we can reach now, that we, you know, who's thinking we can influence. You know, if we're not going to reach everybody, what are you busy wasting your time talking to people about cage-free eggs for? I mean, you know, if there are some people who don't care, you know, if there are some people who are so callous that they don't even care about, you know, they're not even willing to spend 2 cents more a dozen so that they can get cage-free eggs, which won't make a difference anyway. I mean, but which these animal people claim do make a difference, and I think they're wrong. But I mean, if people aren't willing to eat cage-free eggs, what are you wasting your time for? But the bottom line is, Am I going to turn everybody vegan? Are you going to turn everybody vegan? The answer is no. But there's a hell of a lot of people out there we can influence to go vegan. So let's do that. And then when we have all of those people, when we've succeeded in reaching all of those people, then we'll worry about the people who are harder nuts to crack.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And the thing that's so – the one of the things that keeps me going, you know, I've only just started doing this, is that the wonderfully, wonderfully fantastic thing about it is it is a purely individual choice, that everybody has this ability, power, you know, control, whatever, over their own life. Anybody over the age of 15 can decide to go vegan. And that's the beauty about what we're trying to do. If we were trying to start a campaign where we wanted people to overthrow governments or something like that, well, you can't turn around today and say, I'm going to overthrow a government, but you certainly can turn around today on an individual level and say, I'm going to go vegan. So I think that's the beauty and the thing that keeps me going is that, yeah, and then that's what frustrates other people is they say, why aren't they doing it? And I'm like, well, you know, give them a chance to do it, but talk to everybody that you can. But that's the beauty of it, is everybody can do it. There's nothing stopping you. There's nothing.
I'll tell you one of the reasons they're not doing it. One of the reasons they're not doing it is when you have the so-called father of the animal rights movement, Peter Singer, when you have our father telling us, you can discharge your moral obligations by being a conscientious omnivore, or, you know, making sure that you eat meat that's, you know, from animals that have been well treated and slaughtered in a relatively painless way. When you have PETA telling you that, that Kentucky Fried Chicken cares about the welfare of its chickens because it's gassing the chickens, or giving awards to Whole Foods, or giving awards to slaughterhouse designers like Temple Grandin, then that's one very powerful reason why people don't go vegan, because they have an animal rights movement that's telling them they don't need to do those things, that they can do a lot less. And you know what? The one thing I've learned is, if you tell people that they can do the right thing by doing less, they won't do more.
Yeah.
And so if you have an animal movement that's telling them they can do a lot less and still satisfy their moral obligations to animals, that's exactly what they will do. And so I think it's really important to be straight with people and to make it clear that being a flexible vegan, i.e. a non-vegan, is not morally justifiable. And that being a conscientious omnivore doesn't discharge their moral obligations to animals, that animal welfare isn't making things better. I mean, we've got to be more upfront about this stuff, and I think people will respond to it. I want to comment on something you said about choice, because, you know, look, how we treat animals really does say something about, and how we respond to this issue really does say something about what we think about morality, and I'll tell you why. Although morality is a matter of choice and how we decide to live, obviously I can choose to kill somebody tonight or not to kill somebody. That's my choice. But if I choose to kill somebody, there will be a response. There will be a social response. I will be prosecuted.
Yeah.
I will be put in jail. And if I am in the United States and I am in one of the many states that have capital punishment, I will be executed.
Yeah.
Whereas if I choose to eat meat tonight, nobody is going to punish me for it.
Yeah, there's no consequences.
If I choose not to eat meat tonight, I might incur some social disapproval from people who think I ought to eat meat, or who think that there's something wrong with me because I don't eat meat or consume dairy products or eggs or anything like that. And so it is not only so how we respond to this issue and how we deal with this issue really does say an awful lot about what we think about morality, because it involves a moral situation in which the consequences the consequences of not doing what most of us agree is the morally right thing to do, because that's really what most people say. Look, you know, I mean, I look, Elizabeth, if I had a nickel for people saying, you know, I really see what you're saying and I really feel uncomfortable, but I just don't know what to do and blah, 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 you know, but the consequences of not behaving morally are none, you know, there aren't any consequences. So really, it's a matter of who you are. I mean, how we respond, what I'm trying to say is how we respond to this issue is tells us a lot about who we are morally, what sorts of people we are morally. And I would also say, you know, I wouldn't say anybody over the age of 15. I would say as soon as you're capable of making choices and, you know, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years old, whatever, you know, I encourage everybody to make that decision, you know, defy your parents, become vegan. The final thought I want to leave you with is this, and I'm happy to answer any of the questions you have, and maybe we'll do another show in the future and you can have questions that your listeners come up with. But I want to say this. I've been doing this for a long time, and I consider it a great privilege. Is it sometimes frustrating? The answer is yeah. I mean, what's frustrating is talking to animal people and answering the same question again and again and again and again and again and again and again. Like, you know, don't you care about the animals that are suffering now?
Yes.
And, you know, and having to sort of explain to them, you know, no, if you've read a word of what I've written in the past 20 years,
yes,
you know that I think that animal welfare isn't stopping suffering now. So it's useless. But I consider it a great privilege. And my view is that, you know, those of us who accept the abolitionist approach, those of us who sort of have, who see things in this way, who have this particular vision, should feel fortunate, because the alternative is you walk around confused. And I guess it's better to be clear and frustrated than happy and confused or in a state of blissful ignorance or something.
Yeah.
But because as attractive as that sometimes seems, we both know it's not really a viable alternative.
Yeah.
And so the thing to do now is to be you know, feel grateful that we've come to where we've come to, and do our best to turn other people onto it. Because in many ways, I see it as something valuable I want to give to people, and I hope that you see it the same way.
Absolutely, I do, and I know that you don't. You know, you're not going to start a group or anything, but
never.
I understand, but I do have to just say that, you know, you were my inspiration. Reading your words woke me up. And whether anybody hears me talk about it and wakes up, or they hear you talk about it and wake up, like you say, that doesn't matter. That's not the point. But I just want to give you props for changing my life. So thank you.
Well, it's my pleasure. But remember something. I'm one person. I did it. You know, I mean, I worked with groups, but I can assure you, they never did anything to help my work. I mean, I did legal work for them. They weren't doing things for me. But basically, I am one person who decided to devote. You know, I I teach things other than animals, human rights and animal rights and animal rights stuff. I mean, I teach evidence and criminal law and criminal procedure, and I did practice law when I was younger. But I gave all that up so that I could do this. I made a conscious decision. But I'm basically one person, and everything I've done basically, you know, by myself. And with my partner Anna, who has been a vegan with me this whole time. We've been together for 30 years, and we ran a clinic for 10 years. We ran the animal rights clinic at Rutgers, where we litigated animal cases, and we had students working with us it was the only one of its kind in the country, indeed I think in the world, where students were getting 6 academic credits in a semester for working with us. They would spend a couple hours a week learning theory, and then they would actually work with us on cases, and we represented students who didn't want to vivisect or dissect. We represented prisoners who wanted vegan food. We represented people who wanted to engage in vegan advocacy, but for various reasons were being frustrated some way or another, and we represented them. And we ended up closing the clinic basically because the movement was becoming so welfarist. We were we decided to stop it for a lot of different reasons, but our primary reason was that the movement was becoming so welfarist, we were finding it difficult to get cases that really fit with our philosophy of trying to take an abolitionist prohibitionist approach rather than a regulationist approach. But in any event, everything I've done with the website, the books I've written, the website work, all of the podcasts, all of the writings, I mean, that stuff I do. And you can make a difference, I can make a difference, but you know what? Everybody who's listening to this can make a difference. You don't have to be me, they don't have to be you. They can be just them. And the first step is go vegan.
Absolutely. Okay, so Thank you so much for coming on the show, and for giving me all this time. And I hope, and that is the last time I'm going to ask you to explain why do you think people say you're not helping the animals now. I hope that nobody ever asks you that question again.
Elizabeth, I can tell you right now. I can tell you right now, as sure as I am sitting here right now, sometime in the next week, you know what? It'll probably be sometime in the next 48 hours because I get hundreds of emails. But sometime in the next week, I can tell you, I will get an email, or some student will ask me, or somebody's going to say to me, "I understand what you're saying, but isn't it better for us to help the animals who are suffering now?" And you know what I will do, Elizabeth? I will smile. I will act as though it is the first time I've heard the question, because if you get upset with people, you alienate them and you don't educate
True.
them. And I will smile. I will act as though it's the first time I've heard the question, and I will answer it, and I will try to answer it gracefully.
Fair enough. Okay. Thank you so much, Gary. I hope to have you on again, definitely in the future. And I also hope that if anybody here wants to debate you, that they can do it. I'll provide the software and the microphone, and if you provide the time, we'll see if anybody's interested in that.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting if you have some animal welfare groups in New Zealand. I suspect you do. As a matter of fact, I suspect you have nothing but animal welfare groups.
Yes, correct.
And well, because like I'm sure New Zealand's just like the rest of the world, except it's prettier. And so if you have some, I would actually, I'd be happy if you have some animal welfare groups there, where the heads of those groups would like to have a frank and full and open discussion about these things. I would be more than happy to do that. I think that would be actually very entertaining and instructive for your listeners. So be in touch with me and let me know. All
I certainly will. I certainly will. Thank you very much, Gary, and I'll
right.
let you go to enjoy the rest of your day.
Take care, Elizabeth.
You
Nice
too.
talking with you.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, I hope you enjoyed listening to the interview. And if you have any comments or questions or anything to do with these interviews, please email me. It's nzveganpodcast@me.com, and the blog site is nzveganpodcast.blogspot.com. Bye.